Good afternoon. My name is Laurel, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Innovation Awards Round 2. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After our speaker's remarks, we will have a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Ray Thorne with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Please go ahead, sir.
Great. Thank you, Laurel, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for joining. Again, my name is Ray Thorne, and I'm with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We are pleased that you have joined today's conference call on the Healthcare Innovation Awards Round 2. This is a $1 billion initiative to test new payment and service delivery models that will deliver better care and lower costs for Medicare, Medicaid, and or Children's Health Insurance Program enrollees. So again, thank you for joining us today. Just a few housekeeping items at the front. This call is being recorded and will be posted on the Innovation Center's website in approximately a week. The transcript will also be posted within the week. If you are a member of the press, this call is off the record, and if you have a question, please contact the CMS press office at 202-690-6145 or via email at press@cms.hhs.gov. The purpose of today's call is to provide an overview of this morning's announcement, which is the announcement of the Healthcare Innovation Awards Round 2. Our speakers today will be Rick Gilfillan, the CMS Innovation Center Director, and Raul Rakumar, Senior Advisor at the CMS Innovation Center. We will also have Sheila Handley, who is the Director of the Policy and Programs Group, during the Q&A session. After Raul is finished, we will have a quick question and answer session. If you do have questions that we are not able to answer on this webinar, you can email us, and that email address is innovationawards@cms.hhs.gov. And with that, I will turn it over to Rick.
Well, thanks, Ray, and thanks to everyone out there who's joining us. Good afternoon. We're excited about our announcement today, and we're thrilled that you all have joined us. This is an important call to discuss the latest steps we're taking to spur innovation in our healthcare system by supporting some of the most promising ideas from around the country for lowering costs by improving the quality of care. Bringing down healthcare costs is a top priority, and we know that the best way to do it is the same way that leading healthcare organizations do it, by making care better and more efficient. We also know that there are more great ideas out there that can help push this work forward. Innovative practices that make our healthcare system work better for everyone can come from any corner of the country. We know that there's also building momentum among providers to move more rapidly to a value-based healthcare system. That's why today we're announcing nearly $1 billion in awards to applicants who will develop new payment and delivery models that drive down costs for patients enrolled in Medicare, Medicaid, and the Children's Health Insurance Program. These healthcare innovation awards will be given to organizations whose creative solutions to our most pressing healthcare challenges have the potential to serve as blueprints for improving care and lowering costs across the country. In November of 2011, we launched our first round of healthcare innovation awards by issuing a challenge to America's healthcare providers, businesses, universities, and community groups. We asked them to submit their proposals for how to get the most out of our healthcare dollars by delivering smarter care. We received nearly 3,000 proposals. That challenge resulted in the selection of 107 promising innovations with the strongest likelihood to create large-scale sustainable results. Building on that first round, the second round of healthcare innovation awards will focus on supporting innovative models in four specific areas. First, models that rapidly reduce costs for Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries in outpatient or post-acute settings. Second, models that improve care for populations with specialized needs, such as children in foster care or people living with HIV. Third, models that quickly transform the financial and clinical models for specific types of providers, including oncologists and cardiologists. And fourth, models that link clinical care delivery to activities in the community that promote preventive health and improve population health outcomes. As with last year's awards, we're seeking out innovative practices that have a high likelihood of delivering better care and lower costs on a national scale. The last few years have seen us make tremendous strides when it comes to keeping healthcare spending in check. A lot of that is due to the innovations that have helped make care delivery and payment smarter and more efficient. Across the country, public and private sector innovators are developing even more ideas to improve our healthcare system. Today's announcement will allow us to take some of those most promising innovations and put them into action for the benefit of all Americans. That's good news for patients, for providers, for our economy, and for the future of American healthcare. Thank you again for joining us today. Now I would like to turn this over to Rahul.
Thank you, Rick. As Rick mentioned, CMS is pleased to be announcing today a $1 billion initiative to fund applicants that develop new payment and service delivery models that drive down costs for patients enrolled in Medicare, Medicaid, and the Children's Health Insurance Program. We know there are great ideas out there that can help bring healthcare costs down and reward higher quality of care. And we know that the best way to do this is the same way that leading healthcare organizations do it, by delivering better care and delivering it more efficiently. We also know that there is an increasing desire out there to rapidly move to alternative payment models that have the potential to improve care and lower costs. That's why the second round of Healthcare Innovation Awards focuses on testing new payment models to support the service delivery models funded by this initiative. While the first round of Healthcare Innovation Awards was a broad solicitation in which the CMS Innovation Center welcomed a wide range of proposals, In the second round, CMS is specifically seeking to test new models in four categories. I know the Secretary mentioned them briefly in her remarks, but I'll go over them in slightly more depth. These categories were identified as gaps in the current Innovation Center portfolio and as areas that could potentially result in usable models for change in Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP payment methods. In the first category, we're seeking to test models that are designed to rapidly reduce Medicare, Medicaid, or CHIP costs in outpatient or post-acute settings. We are interested in models that focus on diagnostic services, outpatient radiology, high-cost physician-administered drugs, home-based services, and post-acute services. In the second category, we're interested in testing models that improve care for populations with specialized needs. We're specifically interested in models that affect high-cost pediatric populations, children in foster care, children at high risk for dental disease, and persons with HIV/AIDS, with Alzheimer's disease requiring long-term support and services, and persons with serious behavioral health needs. In the third category, we're interested in testing approaches that can quickly transform financial and clinical models for certain types of providers, including physician specialties such as oncology and cardiology, and pediatric providers who provide services to children with complex medical issues. Finally, the last category we're seeking to test models in includes models that improve the health of populations by linking clinical care to preventative health, including models that lead to better prevention and control of cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, and HIV/AIDS. CMS looks forward to working with private and public sector innovators from across the country in implementing ideas to improve our healthcare system. We believe that there are organizations out there who are eager to work with us to transform in innovative ways the healthcare payment and delivery system so that we can improve care for all Americans while lowering costs. More information on the Healthcare Innovation Awards is available on the CMS Innovation website at innovation.cms.gov. Thank you, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Great. Thank you, Rahul. And this is Ray Thorne here again. Adding to Rahul's remarks, I do want to mention that the Innovation Center will be holding a series of webinars in May and June, and that more information will be forthcoming on those webinars. The first webinar will be on May 28th. Again, more information will be forthcoming in the coming days through the Innovation Center website and through the listserv that you can subscribe to on the Innovation Center website. So stay tuned for that. At this time, operator, we are ready for questions and answers.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question at this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. You may press the pound key to withdraw yourself from the queue. Your first question comes from the line of Joel Friedman with University of Pennsylvania. Your line is open.
Hi. Will investigators who were provided awards last year be eligible for this round?
Yes, people who received awards previously will be eligible, though obviously they'd have to be very distinct programs from anything that was funded before.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Charles Fagona with the Mountain States Health Alliance.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Good afternoon. I work for a health system that has 13 hospitals. I was wondering, are we able to submit multiple applications as long as they meet the eligibility criteria, or are we limited to just one application?
No, you're not limited. You can submit multiple applications. This is Rick.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Your next question comes from the line of Rachel Wathman with the John Hartford Foundation. Your line is open.
Thank you. Are we able to see evidence of what's been working with the prior grants, either the outcomes or the processes, to help inform this round of applications?
Rachel, we'll have a series of webinars beginning in a couple weeks, as Ray described, in which we'll talk about other things, other programs that are going on. We won't have specific results from other models necessarily to share with you, but we do intend to make the best practices that we've identified in prior rounds of the Innovation Award and in any of our other model tests that are underway, and make those widely available to folks as we learn what they are and what they're producing.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jillian Morga with St. Alphonsus. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. I come from a community that is supported by two nonprofit hospitals, one of which was a grant recipient in your last cycle. In terms of your geographic distribution for these awards, is my hospital at a disadvantage given the fact that another very sizable award was made within my community but not with my hospital as the applicant?
Jillian, we will be looking at geographic diversity across all of the work that we're doing, certainly, but there's no specific consideration that would prevent a problem, I think, from a hospital in a situation like yours from applying and being considered on the merits of its proposal. Ultimately, we do want to have a diversified group of projects and activities around the country, certainly, but we'll be going primarily on the merits of the proposal.
And your next question comes from the line of Walter Schroeder with Kaiser Permanente. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. We applied for the first round of CMMI grants and were not funded, but we were very interested in the feedback from the grant reviewers. Who would we contact to obtain more information about that?
We'll have a mailbox that folks can send inquiries to, and I would suggest that you do that, use that mailbox. We have provided some information, some feedback during the prior rounds. We've not gone back to look at the availability of that information at this time. We'll have to get back to you on that.
And, Walter, that email address is innovationawards@cms.hhs.gov.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Meyer with UES. Your line is open.
Thank you. question as to whether or not these four categories are distinct, or if, for instance, we think that our proposal would work under both Category 1 and Category 4, would that be possible?
Certainly, you can make, we hope everyone, and we know everyone, will make the strongest possible case for your proposal. So if you believe that that is a story that would be important to tell, then you're certainly welcome to tell it.
Again, the question is, does it have to fall into just one category, or can it carry over into more than one category?
No, clearly we understand that it's quite possible for things to carry over, and I'm being direct in saying you should make the best case, and if you believe that that a particular proposal is applicable to more than one category, certainly make that case.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Your next question comes from the line of Jennifer Hike with Sanford Health. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question has been answered.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Your next question comes from the line of John Kim with Dr. Base. Your line is open.
Hi. We're a technology company that services really thousands of docs that take Medicare across the country. Are we eligible, or do we need to be more of a provider organization ourselves? Sorry if that's an ignorant question.
No, it's a fine question. I think the answer is you'll see in the FOA that's available on our website, there's a description of eligible entities. I think you will be eligible, depending on exactly what your organization is like. I would only say that for technology solutions, we'll be looking for them well embedded in part of a broader model that is delivering services. And I'll reinforce what Rahul said. In each of these proposals, we are going to be asking for a payment model that goes with the service delivery model. And so it's important, therefore, for the any kind of technological solutions that be part of a broader solution that talks about service delivery directly and also has a payment model that we can consider implementing.
Thank you, John, for your question. Operator, next question, please.
Your next question comes from the line of Laura Dempsey-Poland with Morton Comprehensive Services. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm just wondering if FQHCs can participate. Are they excluded, or are they allowed to participate?
FQHCs absolutely can participate.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Raju Chavan with Cross Industry Solutions. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My question is, we are a technology company, and we are providing the EHR, EMR-related services. So I just want to know whether the NEEM standard is being enforced, and at least what is the maturity level within CMS of implementing of the NEEM standard?
I'm not sure if you're talking about meaningful use standards. We don't have specific requirements around meaningful use for applicants, but we have an expectation, and we will look at the fact that people are meaningful users, the fact that people are using health data exchanges and other sorts of IT capabilities that will enhance coordination and communication across the health system as criteria that we'll use in evaluating models.
Yeah, because the question is, because since we are involved, a lot of this healthcare, you know, provider from a different region, and everybody has built their own solutions. So when you're talking about exchanging of that information, I think that's kind of a standard. We worked at HHS on the whole data governance and data harmonization issues across the healthcare service provider. So is it that standard is today have been implemented and adopted at CMS, or it is still?
As I said, Raju, there's not a specific standard that we are requiring, but we will be evaluating the proposals in light of the approach that they're able to take in terms of health data exchanges and electronic use of data.
Okay.
It's all, it, and it's described in the FOA that's on the website.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Stephen Crystal with Rutgers University. Your line is open.
I have a two-part question on behalf of states that are looking at payment and service delivery interventions for specific populations like foster care. Would an application organized by a consortium of states with one lead entity be responsive? And with regard to the cost savings in a population like foster care, where many of the cost savings are longer term in nature and pertain to multiple systems, could you say anything about the kinds of time horizons that would be considered in the cost savings projections?
In terms of your first question, the answer would be yes. In terms of the time horizons, we look for you all to make a strong case on that. We are interested and understand that in some of these instances of prevention and some of these other populations, there'd be a stronger, there might be a longer time frame. We don't see this expanding dramatically to non-healthcare system expenditures in terms of that evaluation, but we'll look to specific proposals and evaluate them on the merits.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Chi with Process Proxy. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is simply for applicants who may have applied in round one but did not receive funding. Will that in any way, shape, or form work against an application being submitted again for this round?
No. Applicants from round one are eligible to apply again in round two, provided that they meet the eligibility requirements and criteria described in the funding opportunity announcement.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Joanne Handy with Leading Age California. Your line is open.
Hi. As I recall, in the first round, one had to have some evidence that the intervention that they were proposing had already showed some cost savings, either on a pilot basis or a smaller basis. Is that the case with this, too?
We'll be looking for and considering, certainly, evidence and a history of demonstrating results. We're interested certainly in the history of the organization in terms of being able to demonstrate the capacity to carry out the proposal. We understand that many of the proposals may not be in a position at this time to have demonstrated savings, but we'll be looking at the evidence base that might exist elsewhere for a particular intervention and evaluate the case, the story, that's presented by the applicant. I will say we'll have specific forms available for folks to use to tell their financial return on investment story. We will provide seminars to give some background on the use of those forms, and we'll also we will be expecting folks to be to present rigorous financial analysis in support of their model. And for awards that are over $10 million, we're asking that people obtain actuarial certification of their proposed financial model.
And your next question comes from the line of Jean Gibbons with St. Louis Hospital. Your line is open.
Good morning. I would like to know what the ceiling is, what the floor is, and what the time frame is for the mechanism.
So in the funding opportunity announcement, we describe a range of 1 to 30 million, and we expect to make an award announcement on or around January of 2014.
And I think that going deeper, the letter of intent is due on June 28th, and then the application is due on August 15th.
Can you still hear me, sir?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, great. I mean, what is the time frame for the actual project, please?
So we're looking at a 3-year performance period with a projected start of April of 2014.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Martha Davidson with the Trenton Health Team. Your line is open.
Thank you. Mine's just similar to, tied to the previous question. In the funding opportunity announcement, it talks about phase one and phase two announcements in January. How, what do those phases mean? What do they refer to?
Merely that we intend to announce awardees in batches, and so there will be some group of awardees who are announced in a first phase, and then subsequent awardees will be announced in a second phase.
Okay. I just didn't know if it had to do with geography or type of model or something like that. Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Lynn Barr. Please state your organization. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Lynn Barr from Tahoe Forest Hospital District. I was wondering where you thought the opportunity might lie for rural providers in this announcement.
Well, we think there's plenty of room for rural providers given the specific innovation categories described in the FOA, certainly. We would look at specialized populations as an area. Certainly, the different provider segments would be applicable for this group, as well as community-based approaches to prevention and population health. So we expect and we hope that we'll get, you know, a very healthy engagement from rural providers, probably in all four of the categories.
Great. So when you were talking about providers like cardiologists and oncologists, you would also consider critical access hospitals as being a provider group that you would entertain as an applicant?
There are different providers. Again, look at the wording in the FOA, but the provider segment opportunity would be available for different segments beyond just the ones we've mentioned. Yes.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Sarah Scharf with the Ross Medical Corporation. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I have a question with regards to the performance period. I see that it says that it's in a 12-month budget cycle over the course of 3 years. Would you expect any awards that would be a shorter term, perhaps 1 to 2 years?
As I mentioned earlier, we expect every application to include a proposed payment mechanism that would be the road to sustainability, if you will, for the new service model. So that new payment model can be proposed to start right in the beginning, could be proposed to start year one, year two, year three. If someone came in with a proposal which had a payment model that was, you know, they wanted to use the corporate agreement funding to get something started and then move rapidly to a payment model, we would certainly consider that.
Okay, thank you. And you said that the limit per award would be
we're having a real hard time hearing you. The limits were $1 to $30 million.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nahid Fayed. Please state your organization. Your line is open.
Yes, my name is Nahid Fayed, and I'm with Genova Healthcare. And I wanted to ask, for each category, do we submit a separate application, or can we submit one application for all categories?
I think, as we said before, if you have a particular service delivery model and associated payment model that you think is applicable or fits within more than one category, you can certainly make that case for it. If you have distinct models that you believe are targeted at each individual category, they should be presented as separate categories and separate proposals.
And you already answered the question earlier that you can submit multiple applications as, if needed.
Yes.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Dennis Henry with Telemedics and Healthcare Technologies. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. It's Denise Henry at Telemedicine and Telehealth Technologies. I was wondering, is the project open to pilot programs?
I think everybody probably has their own definition of pilot programs, but what we're looking for are specific service delivery models that that are relevant for a distinct population of patients, a set of providers, and that ultimately are things that could be scaled to become national programs for those populations or types of providers. We expect them to be accompanied by a proposal for a payment model. So at a minimum, we'd expect proposals to meet those criteria. Whether or not a particular approach that you're taking fits those criteria or is more a kind of, you know, standalone, small-scale pilot project in your mind, we'll have to leave to you to decide. We know we're okay with starting something, starting small, but it has to be something that has a payment model and has ultimately broad applicability.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Your next question comes from the line of Brad Stewart with Setter Health. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you very much. In the first round, you deliberately or specifically targeted not just individual organizations, but convener organizations as well that might be able to bring together, say, a standardized model across a number of different providers or geographic areas. Are you considering convener applications in this round as well?
Yes, we are entertaining applications from conveners.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Daryl Drevna with Pulsinelli. Your line is open.
Hi, I was wondering if there were any types of entities or organizations that were categorically or explicitly excluded from submitting an application.
We don't have specific exclusions, I believe, but one thing that I think is a little bit different this time around is we're not focused in this initiative on models of care that specifically, in a tightly focused way, address the use of inpatient acute acute care inpatient facilities that are reimbursed under the inpatient prospective payment system. That's not to say those hospitals are ruled out, but I'm speaking specifically of the types of services we're interested in addressing. And as I described earlier and as Rahul described, we're interested in things that get more at the outpatient side rather than the acute inpatient side of our care system.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jim Mingle with MyCare Team Incorporated. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're a privately owned company that manages people with chronic diseases, specifically have proven results with diabetes. We have multiple hospitals that are reporting now. When the initial phase of the round, they didn't have results. They do now. The question is, this seems to be addressing payment models. And how they would approach the system with CMS. Do you have any guidelines regarding the payment models that I could share with them that you have in mind, or are they supposed to come up for with these new models?
So we're broadly open to a number of different ideas on that front. I would direct you to two sources. One is there is quite a bit of specific language on this in the funding opportunity announcement, and we'll also be doing a series of webinars, one of which will be focused on the development and design of payment models.
Mm-hmm. And I have a follow-up question, if that's okay.
Yes.
The follow-up question is, I believe they definitely have results to low HbA1c, you know, dramatic changes with the patient populations. The question is how that correlates to Obviously, saving money would have to be put into the payment model calculation that you would have to approve. My assumption is that how long of a timeline is the cost savings for this grant to achieve that, because there'd be obviously some ramp-up costs initially.
Yes, well, generally, we understand that. Generally, we expect there to be evidence of a payback within the performance period, and so that generally has been the case. As we know we're looking at models that might have that do have a longer time horizon in some cases, certainly in talking about prevention models. So we're open to looking at models that have a little bit longer time horizon, certainly in terms of payback. We'll look to you all to marshal the evidence and to tell us a strong story on why that makes sense in your particular case, and look to your financial model and the certification of it if it's, as I said, over $10 million.
Okay. Can I follow up with one more question, if you don't mind?
I'm sorry. We have to get to the next question, please.
Okay. No worries. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of John Schlichter with OPM Experts. Your line is open.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So you've just answered a couple of questions. This is about, I'm wishing for you to elaborate what you mean by the term design and your request for a design of a payment model that's consistent with the new service delivery model. Do you have, so you said there's going to be an upcoming webinar, but can you give us an operational definition of a design? I'm really asking along the lines of, you know, what essentially are you requiring? How fully baked does it need to be? If we're doing something that's going to be research-based, that's kind of a discovery, do we already have to base it on empirical data, or can we propose to you something that is a compelling internal logic or proposal up front without existing empirical data?
Yeah. So we expect applicants, as part of their application, to submit the design of a payment model. And by design, we mean a few elements. One is the payment details, so how funds would flow under the payment model, the payment principles, so what specific providers or beneficiary incentives the payment model would create, a description of risk parameters, how the payment model adjusts, shifts, insures, and or limits risk, the return on investment, how the payment model will deliver a positive return on investment for CMS, and how it will result in net programmatic savings for CMS. A statement on the application, so a description of the services or providers to which the payment model will be applied. Scaling, how the payment model can be made available to other providers and potentially serve as a basis for a subsequent solicitation by CMS. And then finally, the progression, how the parameters of the payment model will progress over time.
I would add to that that we understand and fully expect that we will see quite a spectrum of responses with regard to payment model. And some will be very baked, based on good empirical information. Others may be highly speculative. We welcome all in the context of a delivery model proposal that, you know, we will evaluate as well. So we understand that not all proposals can come with everything about the payment model fully baked, but we'll look at kind of the proposal in its entirety and make the selecting official ultimately will have the ability to consider these different dimensions of the proposal, and we'll no doubt have some that look like they're fully baked and some that might be more speculative, but come with a very impressive proposal on the delivery system side. So we expect a full range of, ultimately, awardees to be selected on this score. What we do want to make sure happens, though, is that people understand they need to think through very concretely the service delivery model, the ability of that model to impact significant areas of the patient's experience resulting in improved quality outcomes, and improved cost outcomes, and then being able to link that expectation to some way for CMS and, frankly, other payers, because we will be looking for multi-payer engagement, to be able to pay, make a payment that creates a sustainable model.
Excellent. That's very helpful. Have you decided the dates of the webinar on this topic?
The first webinar will be on May 28th, and information will be forthcoming on the Innovation Center website early next week, and also through the listserv, Innovation Center listserv email blast early next week as well.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Anthony DeFranco with ACS. Your line is open.
You've just answered my question. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Sean Rogers with Rogers EMS Consulting. Your line is open.
Hi. Can you describe a little bit the selection process and how you evaluate and score the applications?
Sure. We'll have a set of independent reviewers that include external folks as well as folks internal to the government. The criteria are neatly spelled out in the FOA. I won't recapitulate the distribution of points, but we'll look at the design of the model and the payment model, the service delivery and the payment model. We'll look at the organization. We'll look at the financial proposal and return on investment. We'll look at the plan for monitoring and reporting to evaluate the proposal. And then we'll also look at the financial model in greater detail for larger proposals. As I mentioned, we'll look over the actuarial certification that accompanies the proposal. We may have our own actuaries have an actuarial review done on some of the smaller proposals that don't include one in the proposal. And then we will look at a variety of other criteria that are contained in the FOA that you can get online at our website.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You bet.
And your next question comes from the line of Keith Bush. Please state your organization. Your line is now open.
Hi. I'm with Align Care, and we're a care coordination company, and we're out of Denver. My question is, will it impact if we're currently we're private pay, will it impact if we associate with a hospital or with other physician groups, or can we be standalone and still get the same weight in the decision making?
I think what we're going to, as I mentioned, one of the criteria will be the design of the model, the design of the payment system, and among other criteria within that, we'll look at the likelihood that it will produce results, the quality outcomes that we're looking for. As always, we're looking for improved health outcomes, we're looking for improved experience of care, and we're looking for improvement in the cost of care. And so the evaluation will be based on whether or not the model and the participants in the model appear to bring together the right set of capabilities to deliver those outcomes, and we'll look for those proposals that seem to bring the right mix to deliver on those metrics.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
I would say also we will look specifically for multi-payer options. And our belief is that oftentimes, or our experience has been that by having more than one payer engaged in an initiative in a community, the more payers, hence the more patients who are benefiting from a proposed intervention with a set of providers, the greater the percentage of the provider's patients that are being supported by this care model, the greater likelihood there is that we'll get the results we're after. And so we will favor multi-payer proposals. We'll also,
great.
I should add one other
okay.
thing, we'll also look at magnitude of impact. So we understand and we will look favorably upon, applications from small rural areas for sure. And we understand that at times they may not be able to bring as much impact in terms of total savings to CMS as folks with larger populations. But where there are larger populations, we will be looking for initiatives that have large-scale impact.
Okay.
Thank
perfect.
You.
Thank you. Operator, we have time for two more questions.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Parul Sinha with Washington University School of Medicine. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. The Head and Neck Oncology Department at my institution is planning conduct of a trial which is prospective, randomized, and a phase 3 clinical trial in design. And it is randomizing patients with a specific type of head and neck cancer, the incidence of which is rapidly rising. And it randomizes them into two treatment arms. And the study is designed to make treatment innovations based on preliminary retrospective data, which has shown that one of these arms has a potential to decrease the treatment intensity, the toxicity, and cost, but it has equivalent disease outcomes. So would this study be eligible for the Category 3 or any other categories of these awards?
Thank you for that question. And I think from what you described, quite honestly, it sounds like that is something that would be more appropriately within the NIH portfolio of research. We're not specifically asking for randomized controlled trials. For some reason that would seem to work and be the right thing to do in a particular instance, we certainly would consider it. But we're not in the space of evaluating specific clinical treatments for, identified, differentiated types of cancer. We're more interested in kind of the service delivery, broader approach of how might an oncology practice take care of their patients, not in terms of which chemotherapy agents to use, but what models of care can they provide that would overall improve their outcomes and decrease the cost of care. In the realm of selecting chemotherapy agents or intervention approaches at that level, that's more in the NIH field.
Okay, quickly, this was not for selecting which chemotherapy regimen, actually, but it is between two, radiotherapy and chemoradiotherapy.
No, my statement would stand, I believe, for the two.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. And, operator, this will be our last question for the call.
And your last question comes from the line of John Whitman. Please state your organization. Your line is now open.
The questions have been answered. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's take one more.
Okay, and your next question comes from the line of Sandy Jamet. Please state your organization. Your line is now open.
Sure, great. My organization is the Corporation for Supportive Housing, and I had a two-part question. The first is we're focused on frequent users, homeless individuals who are frequent users of emergency room and inpatient hospitalization. It sounds like the inpatient hospitalization part of this, reducing costs in that area, is not of interest for this round, but I did have a question about whether emergency rooms, detox services, and other types of costly services and reducing those costs are of interest. That's the first part. And then wanting to know if you could speak to the difference in this round, between this round and the past round, in terms of the focus on new payment models and how that's different than what you looked for in the last round.
Yeah, in answer to your first question, yes. We are, as Rahul spoke to, interested in outpatient services and ways of improving them and decreasing the cost of outpatient services that could be avoided by better community-based care. So, yes, we are interested in that. In terms of the differences, I think we're asking for a very direct proposed payment model, and in this instance, and in the prior, in the first round, we did ask people to describe and speak to a path to sustainability. In this instance, we are looking for, and we think we will receive, proposals that have very specific payment model opportunities as a key part of the proposal, and we expect to weight those payment model proposals heavily. As I've said, we understand that some will be more or less speculative and fully based on good empirical data. We'll weigh all that and consider all that. but we are looking for you all, frankly, to think real hard about how we can connect the service delivery model you're speaking of to a payment approach. And the second major difference is, this, in this instance, that payment approach can start during the period of the cooperative agreement or during the 3-year performance period.
Great, thank you, Sandy. Rick, I think any closing remarks you would like to make?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. First, I want to just thank everybody again for joining us today. It's great always to hear from so many people who are thinking hard about how to address this this issue we have about improving our healthcare system to deliver better health for patients, better experience of care for patients, better cost experience, and over time improving access. And that's exactly the mission of CMS. That's why we're excited to be able to work with you. We appreciate the fact that more and more people are thinking hard about these issues. We know we've raised the bar a bit with this round, looking for more definitive information on your proposed model and the payment model to go with it. We appreciate you all thinking hard about that. Appreciate you spreading the word out there. We're going to provide a bunch of seminars to try and provide more information, provide a learning opportunity for everyone to understand in more detail what we're looking for, and we really look forward to working with you all over these next few months to support the excitement we hope is out there for this next round of innovation awards. Thank you again for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, Rick. And just a quick reminder, one I think Rick...
I'm sorry, I should add one other thing. I'm sitting around the table with a team of people here at CMS who have worked hard to get this proposal to you all, and I just want to publicly in front of this team and everybody who's on the phone thank you and let you know that you have a set of very hardworking federal employees who are dedicated to working with you and making this a very successful program. We'll introduce them all during the webinars, but I just wanted to take note of that today.
Great.
Go ahead, Ray.
Great. Thank you, Rick. And just a quick reminder, we will be having more information on the webinars forthcoming early next week. The first one will be on May 28th, so stay tuned for more information via the CMS Innovation Center website and through the CMS Innovation Listserv. And with that, thank you all for joining today's call, and we look forward to seeing you on May 28th.
And this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.